The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
A major fantasy player just went on the IL. We had some other big news, including another start and won't return until Thursday, plus a lot of closer chaos. That and a whole lot more on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Jeff Erickson here with Fred Zinke. I am about to tweet out a link to it. So if you see me turning away and typing furiously, that's what I'm doing. Fred, what's going on? How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'll be ready to share that tweet as soon as you put it out. My Blue Jays finally got back in the win column last night. It's been a rough stretch for them, a rough stretch that I kind of saw coming. But I think things will be better when they play the Reds this weekend.
Yeah, that's usually the cure for a lot of teams. So yep. I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, they came around a little bit last night. You say you only hear what you want to. Kikuchi was pretty dominant. Again, 3 good starts in a row. Rob Silver's flying the Kikuchi flag all season long, and now his love is being justified. Let's start there. Pretty good outing for Kikuchi.
Yeah, so I still have mixed feelings on him in the sense that he's been fine. Like 3.38 ERA, which in this environment's like it's fine so far. He started off the season not going deep into starts. He's been going deeper into starts lately. However, the control hasn't been good. Like he's walked multiple batters in all but one start. He's walked 3 batters or more in 5 of his last 6 starts. So he's basically walking about. He's averaging 3 walks a game, and he's not super deep in these games. You know, he's had a couple 6-inning starts, some 5s, some less than that. So the control issues concern me, and I wonder if they're going to catch up with him at some point. That being said, the Jays have done really well generally with their pitchers. Jose Berríos this season so far notwithstanding, but generally the Jays do pretty well with their pitchers. So I feel like I wasn't expecting Kikuchi to roar out of the gate. I was expecting maybe the Jays to work with him during the season and him to eventually do well. So maybe that'll happen. But I do think he's, from an ERA perspective, pitched over his head a bit so far. Over his skills, at least, so far.
Yeah. Good opponent this week going up against the Mariners. That helps. Mariners are really struggling to score runs. Mm-hmm. Joe Sheehan wrote them up in his newsletter yesterday, talking about both teams, being the Jays and the Mariners, being perceived disappointments, at least compared to early season expectations. The Jays were still 18 and 17 going into this series, so it's not like they were pulling a Reds or anything. But they were below expectation, too. I mean, they've already played 9 games against the Yankees, and the Yankees are on fire.
Their schedule has been like ridiculously difficult. I saw this coming a few weeks ago where like they've played Houston twice already. They've played the Yankees, like you said, 3 times. They just finished a series with Tampa. They've played a really, really hard schedule, and this is going to even out. They haven't played Baltimore yet at all. So, for example, just looking at Kikuchi, so he's made 7 starts. 3 of them were against the Yankees. I don't think the Yankees are like the scariest team ever or anything, but they're still, you know, above average scary. Yeah. And 2 of his starts were against the Astros. His 2 worst starts were against the Astros. So, and the Astros, I think of still as one of the better lineups in baseball. So, you know, maybe this is, he had a start in Boston there, where he did pretty well. And he had a start last night against Seattle where he did quite well. So again, maybe he, like we talked, I was more thinking about this problem with the Blue Jays in the sense of their hitters. Their hitters have been cold lately. That being said, they face some pretty good. Rays are a good pitching staff. The Yankees are a good pitching staff. Houston has a good pitching staff. So faced a lot of good staffs lately. I do, but maybe that can impact someone like Kikuchi as well, because these teams are also like pretty, no one's great offensively so far, but comparatively they're pretty good.
Yep, that's right. So yeah, and that's the thing. That thing is, they're just, and there's just another homer by the Astros, by the way. Sorry about that. I know you're a Nate Eovaldi owner. I have him in one league, but Astros are teeing off. Michael Brantley just hit the fourth home run of the game against him. So it's now 7-1 Houston on that one there. Sorry, shiny objects are distracting me today, but especially because I have a lot of Astros bats in a lot of places. So I'm like, ooh, I like that. Ooh, I like that.
Did Kyle Tucker hit at least one of those homers?
He did.
Okay, let's go.
Yeah, that's right. I've got him. Hey, the mail. I just saw a thread on that on Twitter. Men like to say "let's go" a lot of times. there you go. You just proved that point. No, I do have Brantley. I have Jordan Alvarez. I have Kyle Tucker in places. So yeah, it's been. I don't have any Jeremy Pena. That's the one guy I just missed out on completely.
Same here. None. And I have no Alvarez. I don't have any of the no speed. Like kind of second, third round type guys. Alvarez, I have no Aaron Judge, who's obviously doing really well so far. It just wasn't the profile of player I was attacking in the first three or four rounds. So yeah, I have, if you're a like sub five steal player who was going in the first three rounds, I probably have zero shares.
Are you going to change that next year? Are you going to open your mind to taking no speed guys early?
Maybe I'll review it once this season ends and look at the data, when the season ends. And like, for example, like we know steals are very valuable because they're very hard to come by. That being said, the steal standings I find are maybe less bunchy, or at least no more bunchy than the home run standings. I find the home run standings are often fairly tight. So steals are more valuable and they're harder to come by. At the same time, the steal standings do sometimes, I find, as the season goes along, spread out. And then you get a couple steals and you're like, oh, thank God, those are like gold. I got a couple steals. But then you look at your standings and you're like, oh, I'm not within three or four or five steals of anyone. So they didn't really get me anywhere. So
plus, they only affect 1.25 categories. Like you'll get a little bit of boost in runs for guys that run more.
Yeah.
But home runs check four different boxes: home runs, RBI, runs, and batting average. You know, they help everything.
Exactly. And I do think the prioritizing of steals also is different in a main event where you feel the need to compete everywhere than just in a single league. We talked, I think, last week about how my labor team was last in steals, but still doing pretty well overall. So maybe I can get them over the hump by fixing the steals problem, or maybe I can actually just leave the steals problem alone and just try to, you know, gain the necessary points to get up to first over the season in other
just
categories.
Trade Whit Merrifield away for whatever else you need.
Yeah, for a closer. That would be probably what else I need, and just punt steals at some point. So that's certainly an option that I could consider. And there's probably someone tightly bunched in the middle who would be, well, I need Whit Merrifield to hit a little better. He went to Colorado, which was great. That kind of cured him at least temporarily, and we'll see where things go from here. He's back in the leadoff spot. I saw he got on base a couple times this afternoon. He's coming around, but the Coors series help. But I kind of want to see him. If I was going to believe in him, I want to see him hit well outside of Coors.
Sure.
Why not? He ain't going back there this year.
Yeah. Well, that leads us to our next topic, and it's Royals related. Bad news. Sal Perez on the IL with a sprained thumb. He got pulled from the game, the first game of the doubleheader. The second game's going on right now. His bases loaded, no outs, and here comes Carlos Santana to pinch hit for him. I'm like, does Mike Matheny, a super genius, know it had to be an injury? Turns out it was an injury, and he's already on the IL. Now, that's also because they already have another game, so this is an opportunity to put another player on there. But this means MJ Melendez is going to play a lot more. Sebastian Rivera was called up, but Melendez, I mean, he's like easily the top man standing. It just means all of his playing time is going to be at catcher, not elsewhere. I almost, in a way, it kind of hurts Melendez, although he wasn't playing totally every day, but maybe he'll play a little bit more now because of that.
Yeah, I think maybe long term it probably helps him because, you know, it gives him just another run here to see what he can do. And his numbers so far have been fine. Not good, not really bad, especially for a catcher. Batting average just under 220, but his strikeout to walk rate's fine. Like he's kind of holding his own, but that's about it, considering that he's a catcher. So I think it's maybe good news for him, just that it gives him a little more time now to try to cement himself as a permanent part of that roster. So if you're someone who picked him up, I think you feel good about this extra opportunity. You know, it'd just be a matter of what he can do with it. And maybe even defensively, it gives him more catching opportunities, more opportunities to handle a pitching staff that isn't great, and maybe show them, you know, that he's the guy to do that job, because obviously the Royals are quite comfortable DHing Perez a lot if Melendez is doing well behind the plate. So I think maybe it's good news for him overall. And I was looking at Perez. His batting average so far this year is really low. That being said, it's mostly just a BABIP drop from last year. And the power is obviously not what it was last year, but I don't think anyone expected that. He was kind of, the batting average was low. Everything else is kind of what we were expecting. He was on pace for, you know, in and around 30 home runs, which I think was a reasonable expectation for him.
Yep. I think that's right. Yeah. You're not going to like this. Nate Eovaldi just gave up another home run. It is now 9-1.
Get him out of this game.
This is the top of the second inning. There are two outs. The home run. This was Yuli Gurriel that just went yard tonight. I got to find out now where do I have Eovaldi? I mean, that's one of the worst feelings in the world. It's like, oh God, where do I have this guy?
I know it is. It is the worst feeling. I'm going to look up. I don't think I have him in our labor league. Thank goodness, because my pitching in that league is kind of carrying me. I definitely have some shares.
I only have him in one NFBC 50. Okay. I feel a little bit better about that.
Okay.
That's better, but wow. Wow. I mean, it's painful. They finally pulled him. 1 2/3, 9 runs allowed, 5 homers. I don't know if there's any that are unearned. You got to just cross fingers, hope it's that, but, yeah. Ouch. Tough times there.
That is.
Brian Mortimer has Sal Perez. He's asking a question, catcher question for us. Cal Raleigh or Luis Torrens, two Mariner catchers with Tom Murphy out right now. Who do you like better?
Neither. I guess I'll go with Torrens.
I'll go with Torrens too. Follow up, Patrick Bailey or Joey Bart?
No, I'm not a Joey Bart guy usually, but I guess I'll take Joey Bart.
All the strikeouts there is the only problem.
I know. But, I know.
Patrick Bailey, I mean, he's just farther out. I don't really know the answer to that just yet. I mean, he's struggling so far in high A ball for the Giants. Patrick Bailey is, but you know, I would defer to James Anderson when it comes to catcher prospect questions. Prospect questions, period. Follow up on catchers though. David asked a good question here. Some experts were going early catcher in NFBC. Do you think that narrative will go away? I don't think so. I mean, Will Smith homered today. I'm not like, oh, Will Smith's amazing, but he's still pretty good. And have you looked at how bad catchers have been this year? I mean, they've been really bad.
Yeah. I mean, it stands to reason when the whole league is hitting worse, catchers who are already, you know, really bad, there's so many of them hitting in the 100s or right around 200 right now.
Right.
I was looking at Gary Sanchez yesterday because I thought, hey, his batting average is suddenly not quite so much a drain as it usually is. And then I looked and he's not even really hitting for power. I think he had 3 home runs.
Yeah.
So I was like, man, even if Sanchez was on his usual home run pace, but was hitting, you know, 213 or something like that this year, you'd be like, oh, okay, I can live with that. So I don't know. I think it's a fair question on the catchers.
So
Perez was disappointing overall. Like he was hitting 203 and he was drafted in the third round of a lot of leagues. So that's disappointing. JT Realmuto has been a little bit disappointing so far. Not terrible, but a little disappointing. And Will Smith has been a little bit disappointing so far. Not terrible. The runs and RBIs are there. The batting average is fine, but he only has 2 home runs. So he like that's a little disappointing for people who took him in right rounds 4 or 5. Some of how early catchers go, I think, though, the following year will depend on how well certain – it's not as much of a theory of are there catchers who are coming off a season that tantalizes fantasy managers, right? So there needs to be a catcher in the, like, it was hard to turn your back on Sal Perez when you looked at it and you were like, man, I could get a catcher who hit 48 home runs last year. Like, I got to consider that in the third round. Even if I don't think he can repeat, I've got to consider this. This guy could lose 15 home runs and still be amazing. So there has to be a catcher who's good enough this season where he screams, you know, to fantasy owners next year during draft season, like you have to consider me early. So I think it'll depend on whether someone like Realmuto or Smith picks it up to the point where they finish with really good numbers.
Yep. Yep. I think that's right. Well, I'm looking at the earned auction values on RotoWire right now. Yep. And by catcher, can you name the most productive or most financially, or, you know, according to our algorithm, the most valuable catcher so far?
I don't have a good guess. I did an article about 3 weeks ago on Yahoo about the top 10 catchers at the time and how many of them were rostered in less than 20% of leagues, because so many of them were. So who is
right? It's Tyler Stevenson.
Right.
324. So that's why. I mean, if batting average is just getting tanked across the board. Yeah, makes sense that, you know, when he's hitting 324 with four homers, 19 RBI and 13 runs, he's only had 68 at bats though. And that he missed some time where the weekend had a ball, you know, fouled a ball, a foul ball went off his mask, took him out for that game. He sat the next game. He had already missed a number of games with a concussion from that home plate collision. So Jeff Brantley, the Reds TV guy, was a former Red pitcher, was arguing in favor of pulling him out from behind the plate because he's too valuable. You know, get the, you know, Craig Biggio treatment or whoever, whatever compares you want to make. And I can see it actually, especially with the Reds, because let's face it, who's he holding back? I mean, you can either put him at first, you can put and have Votto DH. You can put him at DH. There's spots, point being here. But now that we know that a DH is a permanent thing, I think it's not a bad idea.
So do you have that catcher list still up in front of you? Who are the next couple behind him?
Yep. I'll give you a hint. Number two hit a grand slam yesterday. Batted leadoff for his team.
Batted leadoff and hit a grand slam yesterday. See, now you're going to know that I wasn't up to date on my box scores from yesterday.
And
go ahead.
Wilson Contreras.
Oh, yes. I remember that. Yes. Wilson Contreras. Yeah. So he's a pretty steady guy. The reason I was asking is Stevenson. So I have an article coming out in 2 days on the luckiest hitters in baseball so far, and Stevenson might be the headliner for that. So just
don't rain on my parade, man.
He has a 400 BABIP.
I have one good thing going this year. Two, Hunter Green, and three, the Overton window is still open. So I got that going. I mean, he's pitching well again today. Up 2-1 in the bottom of the six right now against the Guardians.
Way better than Nady Evaldi right now. So the reason I ask is going back to the question we were asked is that, so Stevenson, his XBA right now is something like 235. He's got a 400 BABIP. He's not a fast runner. His quality contact's fine. It's nothing special. His batting average should be maybe not 100 points lower, but many points lower. Contreras is kind of a steady Eddie who's having that kind of a season. Like the grand slam obviously would help him to jump up and catch your rankings pretty darn
22
fast.
Runs for Contreras though.
Yeah,
too.
That's good. It's we'll see unless Realmuto, now that Perez is going to miss some time, unless someone really gets going. If the best season from a catcher this year is something like a typical Wilson Contreras season, 20 low 20s home runs, you know, decent runs in RBIs, a batting average in the 260s or something. There won't be any catchers drafted early next season because there won't be any who weren't being drafted early. I think Realmuto is the one guy. I guess Perez could come back from this injury and get really hot. That's the other one. But Realmuto, I think, is the one guy because he steals bases who could put together a stretch where all of a sudden, you know, when he finishes the year, he's got, you know, 20 homers and 15 steals or something like that. And then he stays in the earth for the first five rounds. But I don't see someone like Stevenson's off to a nice start. If I believe that he could keep that going, he would be someone who maybe could get drafted really early next year. I just don't see it happening.
Yeah. And it's like, we knew Stevenson was going to be good. He was a top 10 catcher.
Yep.
You know, so, and to be fair, it's $1 worth more than Contreras and Varsho. So, and Varsho's got three stolen bases. Stevenson has one. That actually matters too. That clicks a little bit, especially this early. And there's a big drop off after that.
Yeah, Varsho's another guy. So lump him into that Realmuto group, like I said. And that was the reason people were going for him. You know, he's got six homers and three steals. If he could keep this going, if he could finish the season with 20-something homers and 15 steals, I could see people, you know, drafting him to, in an effort to get steals and catcher locked up, him going pretty early next year. Because this is, people were dreaming on that this year, and he was going inside the top about 90 picks. Like, I found he often went in about the 80s for picks. So if he actually does it, then I could see him going in the, whatever, 50s or something like that next year.
Yep, I think that's right. It is telling that of the top 10 catchers, all like the you know, may not, you know, Real Muto and Will Smith and Sal Perez weren't killing it, but they're still top 10 positive value catchers so far.
Yeah.
Not by a lot. I mean, it drops off pretty quickly. There's Jonah Himes fourth at $7, Travis d'Arnaud at six, Will Smith and Sal Perez at five, Real Muto, Sean Murphy at four. And there is no other zero. Everything else is zero or worse with catchers. So it drops off in a hurry. And some of the, so the thing is, all your like mid-tier catchers, that's where the big loss was, it feels like to me. Like the, you know, that's where we're really, Kybert Ruiz, Foxborough was asking about Kybert Ruiz, and he's close. He's at, he only has 10 runs and 10 RBI despite 104 at bats. So it's just because Washington is so darn bad. He only has one homer also, so you can blame him a little bit too. But he's not killing you. He's fine. He's got the upside potential to move, a couple homers, and all of a sudden he's like fifth. You know, that's the thing. That's how it's early enough that it could change. I don't know. I just think it's interesting to take a look at that every once in a while.
Yeah, and the bottom of the catcher pool, as you mentioned earlier, has been so bad. That'll be the other part of draft strategy, I think, next year that will be interesting. First is, like, are you going to take someone like Real Muto, Varsho, Sal Perez, or whatever, in the first four rounds? The other question will be, how do you attack just the mid-tier of catchers when they weren't very good this year, but, you like, are you willing to go to that bottom tier of catchers? Is that the play? Just wait and just take whoever because they're so bad anyways? Or do you feel like you need to lock someone in so you don't end up scraping the bottom of the barrel? We'll see how it all plays out this year.
One more catcher question. Who knew this was going to be catcher cast, but that's okay. Fred, I have Kirk on several teams, David says. Yeah. With Jansen back, what's Kirk's usage?
I think Kirk's usage will be fine, but not great. Like, I think he missed a window here to really hit well. And again, maybe the hard schedule kind of slowed him down. What's interesting about Kirk, I'm pretty confident he's going to give you a decent batting average. He's hitting .263, which in this environment for a catcher is really good. He's 11-11 strikeout to walk. So like that, and that's pretty much what was like last year too. There's just no power there. Like last year he did hit 8 home runs. So far this year he only has 1. I just don't know if he has enough power to be that impactful for fantasy. And I think Jansen quietly the end of last year was really good. And then the very, very little he's played this year so far was good. They like the way he catches them. I think they like the way he catches the pitching staff the most. They have a problem with Kirk, but they like Jansen the most. I think Jansen goes back in playing 2 out of 3. Kirk plays 1 out of 3. And then Kirk probably fits in a DH game, in there somewhere. So maybe gets 4 starts a week. That's kind of what I'm feeling from him. And I'm just unless he starts hitting for more power, maybe he needs a better baseball. I don't know, but because he's not a big power guy, that's got to be the next step for him because his plate control is really good.
Yep. Agreed. Couple more catchers to bring up. I actually was bidding on a couple this week. William Contreras on the Braves and Christian Bethencourt on the A's. Contreras has already gotten 4 homers since getting the call. And he's playing some at first base. And I was watching the Braves game on Saturday. And they said he might even get some reps in the outfield here and there. Point is, they want to get his bat in the lineup, even though they only have 2 catchers. You know, I've seen a lot of teams put a catcher at DH and then have their other, so they have both catchers in the lineup, risking losing the DH at points. And we've seen that actually. A couple of pitchers have had to hit or been pinch hit for and things like of that nature. But, that is one of the downsides to a catcher. We always thought, okay, Will Smith's going to get some at-bats this way. And it really hasn't materialized like we had hoped. And a couple other NL catchers. It has happened with Tyler Stevenson. It does, though, either require you to carry 3 catchers or have that extra bat available there because otherwise you could lose your DH.
For sure. So, at that point, I think the carrying 3 catchers is the way.
Yeah,
that I do being too. Said, but you need a catcher who you feel like you want in the lineup. Contreras so far has been one of those players. You look at his stats from even from last year, because last year he played, I think, maybe more than some people realize. He had 185 plate appearances and he hit 8 home runs. Like, there is some pop there in his career. Now he's got 12 in a little over 200 plate appearances. So there is some pop there. And with catcher being so barren, you know, it depends on obviously who you dropped. For example, I had James McCann in our labor league. He's out for several weeks now. He wasn't doing anything good anyways. I ended up I didn't drop my IL'd him for, and I picked up Jonah Heim.
Who's been awesome. Probably,
Contreras and Bethancourt probably would have been the next two on my interest list as far as replacements go. So yeah, Bethancourt's interesting too, because again, there's just so many ways to get in the A's lineup that if he's hitting decent, they can find a way to put him in, and maybe the odd steal, and that helps.
Exactly. Exactly right. Another big item, Bryce Harper going to be out of the lineup, maybe at least until Thursday, now they're saying. Bryce Harper, again, using our earned auction tool, is the most valuable player in baseball so far this season.
Wow.
Hitting .305, 9 homers, 6 stolen bases, 27 RBI, 29 runs. He's checking every box.
Yeah, absolutely. I think maybe, I don't know, I feel like Bryce Harper, I guess he's underrated in fantasy or underrated in baseball, but I think he's just kind of, people have just gotten used to him.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I can't say he's underrated. Maybe I can't say he's underrated, but I feel like he's not discussed for how good he is. I feel like he's not discussed. Like I know he won an MVP last year. I don't know. I never hear him discussed when they say the best players in baseball.
MVP last year. And you know,
that's good.
The biggest free agent a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I don't know. When I hear people talk best players in baseball, obviously Trout, and then I hear people talk about Tatis before he was hurt, and Acuna and things like that. I don't know. I just feel like Bryce Harper, we've just accepted that he's awesome. He's right around 1,000 OPS, which in this hitting environment is amazing. He was over 1,000 OPS last year. In the shortened season, he was over 950. He's become more consistent than he was a few years ago.
That's right. That's right. And that's, he's no longer controversial at all. I would say I think that's the big takeaway there. There was that, is he clutch? I get that. Yeah. Maybe that'll come up because the Phillies haven't done anything yet, but it's certainly not because of him. I think that we can put that to rest. Like 2 years ago when he struggled in his first year, everyone was a little concerned about that, but I don't think that's the case now. Bad break if you don't, for like NFBC, I thought, okay, maybe he won't play Tuesday and then he'd be back today. Or maybe he wouldn't play today, but then he'd be back the next day. Well, it looks like it won't be till Thursday at least at the earliest. So bad news there.
Is there any actionable move you would make with him? Like, would you try to trade for him and just test out his owner and see if they're panicked? Would you, if you had him, would you try to trade him away while he's still ranked number one in fantasy? Like, as soon as he gets back for 2 or 3 games, would you try to trade him away just so you're not potentially dealing with this nagging injury the rest of the season?
I mean, unless you're just getting a mint for him, I just can't see it. I think that's the tough part is, you're afraid of, like, if the Phillies falter, then maybe they'll shut him down. Or if this PRP doesn't work, then that might be an issue there too. I don't know. I mean, I think I would try to trade for him while bringing that up and saying, hey, I'm trailing. I need to take a chance.
Yep.
Let me go after your best player and I'll give you all. But what are you going to give up that's buying low? I mean, come on. The Bryce Harper manager isn't going to give him cheap.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I always think of all these different, kind of creative type scenarios. Like, would you trade Trey Turner for him right now? He's not hurt and he'll probably steal more bases.
Homered today.
He probably doesn't have more steals actually right now, but he probably will by the end of the
year. Yeah, I was just going to say, he's not, I have him in Yahoo Friends and Family, and that team, he's faltering right now.
He's been fine. He's been fine. He's a little overwhelming, but we're talking about the consensus number one overall pick.
Would I take Trey Turner for Harper if I had Harper? That I'd have to think about. I think that's the question.
If you had Harper, would you take Trey Turner for him? Yeah, that's the question.
I think it's the problem is, like you said, is you're not guaranteed to lose that much in stolen bases right now. And Harper's better at everything else. Maybe not batting average, but I probably would accept Turner for him only because he doesn't have a present injury. I mean, it's a partially torn UCL. Yeah. I mean, there's a non-zero chance he gets shut down. Now, we said the same thing about Tatis last year, and he didn't, although he missed a lot of time. He didn't get shut down with that shoulder. You know, we remember how much we talked last year about how he may need surgery at some point.
Yeah.
Well, he still may need surgery at some point. It hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, Harper, just this may be a chance you need to take to win your league. But if someone offered you Trey Turner, they're offering you a way to get out of that chance. Bo Bichette, would you take Bo Bichette for him? He's been a little underwhelming so far, but not.
No, I prefer awful. Harper the rest of the way.
You take Harper the rest of the way.
Yeah,
because I'd say Bichette was drafted before Harper in every league.
I agree, and almost every league.
Yeah, yeah, and he's not hurt, and you know, and like I say, Bichette's been bad, not like completely horrendous, not like Marcus Simeon bad or something like that, but he's been underwhelming.
My argument there is that he has less of a track record than Harper and of Turner for that matter. And Turner also has multi-position eligibility. I would prefer Harper at this point. I know that might be crazy, but I do. I might be just front running and so be it if I am, but you know, I think there might be something to the notion that, you know, there's more, maybe a book out on, you know, there might be a little bit of a book out on Bichette, and he's going to have to make some adjustments.
I'll do one more, and then Vlad Guerrero.
I would prefer, those guys were interchangeably good. I would prefer, I'd prefer Harper because of the speed.
Okay.
How about you?
If I could live without the speed, I think I'd take Vlad and just not have to deal with the potentially injury risk of Harper. Just, I know Vlad's, again, he's off to a fine start, but like he's been worse than Harper. I think I would take Vlad. Bichette, no, I think I'll stick with Harper, and I would take Trey Turner.
Okay.
I'm trying not to get too wrapped up in the small sample sizes of the season so far, but what Harper's doing is great. And like I said, like what Harper's doing is just basically what Harper did last year and the year before. So it's not really surprising, but the injury risk is definitely like it has to play into it.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
I'd agree. I mean, maybe I might take Vlad for him. I don't know. The two places I have, there's two places where I have Harper, one of which I also have Vlad, and it's an OBP league, and there's no way I'm trading that away because it's an OBP league. And the other league is the NFBC main event where there are no trades. So
perfect.
I'm just going to ride it out and hope for the best. I don't know.
Really interesting thing. One thing before we leave Harper is that when you talk about an OBP league, his walk rate this year is way down. So just unusual for him. His walk rate's usually sky high. This year, his walk rate's down. So he's maybe he's going after it a little bit more. He's putting more balls in play than usual.
Yeah, and maybe also there's Nick Castellanos, there's Rhys Hoskins, there's Kyle Schwarber on the team. It's not that he's getting protected per se. It's just that they don't want to put him on because someone can hurt him behind him. You know, so they don't pitch around him as much, and they try to just get him out.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. Yeah, that's quite possible.
Yeah. Before we move on, another news. We're going to share a quick note from our sponsors on the Blue Wire Podcast Network.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
And we are back. Thanks for those of you that are streaming with us and dealt with the 5-second pause. We appreciate you too. A couple other big items. Ronald Acuña back in action tonight. Missed about 4 games with the groin injury. Didn't play yesterday. People had to make that tough decision. Okay, are you going to start him for the week or not? Hopefully you did, because he's back in there.
Yeah, and good news. Well, he's been another really lucky guy so far. I was going to say good news overall is that since he's been back, he's hit pretty well. He has a 450 BABIP. He's been pretty lucky overall as far as that goes.
Yeah,
as
but I think we doubt that he's good.
So what's great is I don't doubt that he's good. If he gets a little BABIP luck while he's shaking the rust off, then that's great. His strikeout rate's higher so far. But I mean, expecting him to be a little rusty when he came back is fine. I think the most important thing you've seen from Acuña is the 5 steals and 5 for 5
yep.
stolen base attempts so far. So that was the big. I know the two concerns were, how many games is he going to play, but also, are you going to end the season with a lot of steals or like 5? Is he just not going to steal bases?
Right.
Well, he gets back to 100%. Well, he's clearly going to steal bases. So, it's good that he's back in the lineup. And I do think these little problems, like striking out a little bit too much, I think those will all get ironed out as he gets a little more time back in the lineup.
Yeah, that's right. He did get the one hit for the Braves so far leading off the game today. Jake Odorizzi, I don't know if you saw last night, he collapsed trying to go run over to first. Lower leg discomfort is what they're calling. They've already put him on the IL. They were dealing with a 6-man rotation. So Christian Javier is the guy that gets obvious job security. Now, do they bring anybody else to do a six-man after that? I don't know. Someday, theoretically, they're also going to get Lance McCullers back. So they actually have 7 guys for 5.5 spots. We'll see how long Odorizzi's out. It did not look like a short-term thing for me. And keep in mind now it's 15 days for pitchers starting this month.
Yes, exactly. A couple things on that injury front. So first of all, Odorizzi, easy drop in all NFBC leagues, despite the fact that he's pitched well so far.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, like, would you say, like, yeah, unless we find out that he's just going to miss the minimum, that, like, unless we surprisingly find that out this week, that you would drop him?
I think I would drop him just because you can always pick him back up. Mm-hmm. It's not like the drop is forever. Mm-hmm. Maybe you have to pay for it. But if you, I'm trying to make a point of, like, guys that were drafted in the 20th round, just keep rotating them anyhow. 20 plus rounds. And if you're going to be without them for a couple of weeks, there's the opportunity cost of not picking somebody else up during that stretch. And I feel like, maybe you don't even need that person you're picking up right now, but maybe that person, that player becomes someone that it becomes a regular guy that you get on, that you're going to use full time. And if you are holding on to Odorizzi, I heard Odorizzi during that, you missed out on that chance to pick him up. Especially if it's a possible closer. I think that's what I would do. If I need it, I think I would almost certainly try to find some sort of speculative play.
Yeah, I agree with that. If the skills looked better behind the 3.13 ERA,
right,
I might hold him until we figured out how long he's out. But he's got a 21-12 strikeout to walk ratio. It's not very good. He's been successful because he's only allowed 1 home run so far. That's a huge part of it with him so far this season. I was actually on board, especially because starting pitching is just going so well overall with people who picked him up. but I wouldn't hold him through this. And this might give Christian Javier, who's really stunk last time out, which is unusual for him, but this may give him the really long runway he needs. Like he's had some starts recently, but then he went start, then a 3-inning relief appearance, then a start that was a disaster. Maybe this could give him an opportunity to just like make like 6-7 starts in a row.
And
try to throw 5+ innings in all of them and really show what he can do. Cause I really like him. I have very few shares this year because I was worried about his role, but I really like him.
I feel the same way. Forrest Whitley was mentioned. Forrest Whitley still recovering from TGS. He's supposed to return some point in June. So he was not among the guys that was among, was on the decision tree to be called up at all there. So we'll see when he makes his progress. We'll do that. Couple of other bad news items here. Brandon Lau went on, surprise Monday IL trip. The stress reaction in his lower back. I had heard, maybe I don't have him anywhere, so I didn't really hear much about him, but he's going to be out for a while. He said no baseball activities for at least 3 weeks. So that's pretty bad.
And back injuries are like those sometimes can wipe out a season. Like just linger. I mean, even when you're back. So I'm not saying that'll happen to him, but we've seen that where guys return.
Right.
They just can't get all their power. He's another guy who's been disappointing so far this year. And it's just all the things. Power's down like significantly, not to nothing, but significantly. Batting average and BABIP are down. He's someone who I would have expected to come around if he was still in lineup. But this is a big. So would you drop him in any NFBC leagues? I think I have to hold him for now.
Yeah, I'd hold him for now, but
yeah,
I'd
have to have a real injury problem on my roster to consider dropping him.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I would redouble my efforts to pick up Vidal Brujan if he's still available.
Yeah.
Because now there's two spots for him to play. Remember they already had put on Brujan was already getting extra time because Manny Margot was on the IL. So that's two spots now where Brujan has a chance to play. That's enough for me to kind of redouble my efforts to go get him a little bit there because you're talking about this is a 20 stolen base guy if given the playing time. Now, granted, he's got to start hitting before that actually kicks in. But still, I think that this is something you want to watch for a little bit there. Finally, Clayton Kershaw was scheduled to have a bullpen session tomorrow. That's not going to happen. He experienced discomfort. Recently had an epidural for his SI joint inflammation. That is a joint that is in your hip. It's his lead hip. He's a left-handed thrower. The right hip is the one he's feeling that in. They're hoping that would clear out the inflammation, and now he's still got soreness there. It's taking longer to yield the desired effect, is the phrase that I saw. So we're not going to get him back that quickly.
No, and I mean, injuries were part of the package for those who drafted Kershaw.
Right.
This is a different one, but this is, kind of where we're at with him. He hasn't made 30 starts since 2015. You knew there would be some injury time built in. Hopefully it's not too long, but I think we talked about, when we projected his innings for this year, he threw 121 and two thirds last year that we were expecting something similar this year. You could still get that. He could miss. Hopefully this doesn't end up being a really long time, but he can miss 3 or 4 weeks with this and you could still get your 120 or so innings from him. And if they're good innings, like what he had done so far, he'd been 32-3 strikeout to walk so far. That's really impressive. If he can come back and pitch really well, then I still think you could get most of what you expected from him.
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
Yeah.
The home runs keep flying at Fenway. Don't worry, it's not Evaldi. It's Jose Urquidy gave up this one. JD Martinez just went deep.
Okay.
I do have Urquidy in one of my two main events, and he better go five after getting 9 runs of support. If he doesn't get those 5 innings, those are just the worst. I'm feeling this coming. I feel like a 4 1/3, 6 runs allowed sort of outing coming here. I just feel it. It's not going to be good.
Yeah, he's another guy. I can't remember if I put him in or not, but he was on the fringe of getting put in for starters who have been really fortunate so far this year. His strikeout rate's down a fair amount. The control skills are still there, but the strikeout rate's been down so far this year. So he's someone who I'm like mild, not super concerned about, but I am mildly concerned about him.
Yeah, I am too. Are you more than mildly concerned about Noah Syndergaard after yesterday's disaster start?
I was never in on Noah Syndergaard.
Yeah.
I kind of have strong opinions on him that he's not actually that good. But But so I wasn't really that in on him. But the, you know, not, no, yesterday's start was a disaster. I think if I had Syndergaard in some leagues, his ratios are still decent. They were really good going into that start. Maybe I think you can just shake this one off. Like Lucas Giolito had that famous one last year. Guys have these happen. Nady Evaldi just had one. So yeah. This is just a start where nothing went right for him. It seems like, you know, unless we hear about something, like unless he ends up on the IL in a day or two, hopefully this is just a really bad start. Like I said, I wasn't in on Syndergaard at all during draft season. So I haven't, you know, this didn't impact me at all. But I just feel like with him, he's typically not a low whip guy. That kind of bothers me. I don't know. He just struggles most seasons. He kind of struggles, I feel like, to put everything together.
Yeah, I'd say that's, I'm with you on that. I don't think I have any Thor either. So I was a dispassionate observer. Mm-hmm. You know, funny thing is, despite that outing, he's got a 3.60 ERA and a 1.23 whip.
Yep. Yeah. Go ahead.
That just shows how well he's been running so far. And two of those runs yesterday were unearned too. That also, you know, the unearned run is kind of sometimes a fraud, but I don't think in this case it wasn't, but just saying it can be that sometimes.
Yes. And yeah. So if you drafted where he was going in draft, if you drafted Thor, like you would have taken this. Six starts in, three wins, 3.60 ERA, 1.23 whip. You'd take that. It just didn't come in the fashion that you expected. One of my bigger criticisms for him with owning him too lately is his strikeout rates aren't what they were supposed to be. They aren't what they were his first two seasons in the majors. Like we thought he was going to be a special strikeout pitcher. And then he was basically like a 9K per nine through his time with the Mets, but 9K per nine wasn't really special near the end of that. Like we're starting, that was kind of just normal for someone who could be on a mixed league fantasy team. And then this year it's down. Like he's got 22 strikeouts in 30 innings. So his strikeout rate's way down. That's kind of my concern with him. He's not a whip helper usually, and his strikeout rates aren't special. So now you're just hoping, and he's not durable. So we'll see how he is this year coming off like all the missed time and you know, surgery. But I don't know. I feel like there's a lot more red flags with him usually than his draft position indicates. And I know he wasn't drafted really high this year, but it was still too high for me.
Yep. I hear you on that. Are you worried about Tyler O'Neill? Sat two games over the weekend. He's on a major K run. Just really struggling. I just saw a tweet come by saying that the Mets just intentionally want Corey Dickerson to face O'Neill, which with the right, granted, it was with a right-handed pitcher. So, you know, obviously, you know, you get the, and it was, I think it's two outs forcing a force play, but still, I mean, that speaks volumes about how bad O'Neill's slumping.
He is. And you said, am I worried about him? I think I am, because I think the Cardinals are worried about him. I think that's part of it, right? Like them sending him out. I guess they're just trying to help their player to clear his head maybe, but I think they're worried about him. They don't have a lot of alternatives. Like they've already dipped into their minor league system with Yepez to help fill out their batting lineup. So I think O'Neill's going to get more opportunities. He's one of those guys who has this really intriguing power speed mix, where he can, when you do projections, he can shoot up it really fast because you start adding in home runs and adding in steals and he shoots up really fast. But I mean, going into last season, he was drafted very late in mixed leagues last year. He didn't come out of nowhere. He was someone that people were intrigued by, but like nobody was counting on him last year. I think even in my NL tout last year, he went for like $6 or $7, and that's in an NL only league. So he was not a coveted player at all last year. He's always kind of been a high BABIP guy, and he was last year. This year he's been a low BABIP guy. That's, you know, hurting his batting average a ton. I don't know. He's someone I would consider. He actually is someone I would consider buying low on, because when I look at the skills, I don't think they're that much different than last season. So if the person who owned him wanted to get out now, I think I would consider it. I'd want a discount, but I think I'd consider it.
Right. Like I think you're looking at like maybe a 10th round player, not a 4th round player. That's basically kind of like the discount I'd be looking for, Tyler O'Neill.
I might need it to be bigger than that because he's really slumping.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm just thinking of names and 10th round. I might need it to be a little bigger than that, which maybe means I wouldn't be the person to get him. If I had O'Neal, though, I would also, it depends on the makeup of my team. If I had O'Neal and I had a team that was otherwise going well, I would consider selling a bit low on him, like for a 10th round type price. If my team was struggling and I was like, well, you know what, I might as well just sink or swim with this guy, because once, if he does get hot, you know, he can really power my team. I think I'd hold on to him. But if my team was slumping, I'd consider it.
So my team is slumping in Yahoo Friends and Family, and that's where I do have him.
Okay.
So I don't know if I think I'm just going to ride it out.
I feel like in your situation, I would ride it out. If my team was otherwise good and I was like, this guy is like really holding us back, an otherwise really good team, then I would consider maybe taking someone who's more of a 10th round player, but is actually performing well this year.
Yeah, I think that's right. Let's talk a little free agents, guys that snubbed you, even though, well, you snubbed yourself. George Kirby, you had him. You had him. You're close to getting him. And then you just said, I'm going to just cut that down. I'm going to try to save some money. Your goal is to always finish second place in fab bidding. Mission accomplished, huh?
Yeah, this is one of those few times where I wish I had finished first place, because in one league where I really wanted him, I have a team that has a lot of hitting points, very few pitching points. I think the cardinal sin, everyone listening can learn from this, I hope. Learn from my mistakes.
Okay.
Don't lower your fab bids near the deadline. That's what I did. I had a bid in of, I forget, 280 something. It was 282. I don't know, 15 minutes before the fab deadline, I was like, oh, maybe that's a little rich. You know, he had the only one strikeout last time. Maybe I want to, anyways, I lowered it $20. I missed out by 15. I should have left it. I think I'm going to make this a rule for myself. If I want to go in 15 minutes,
if you want the player, especially.
Yes, I know. And he would have been a good fit for that team. So I think, I don't know. I got cheap and I'm going to try to learn from the mistake. I think I'm going to try to set a rule for myself that if I want to go in 15 minutes before and raise my bid, because I've just decided I really want this player, I'm going to throw $20 more at him, then sure. But I think I'm going to try to stop myself from going in at the end and lowering my bid. Do you think that's a good rule?
Yeah, I think you should definitely. I think that happens all the time. I think in fantasy football, the equivalent is SWAT. You know, you put all the decisions, you know, thought into your decision earlier in the week, and then you get that right 10 minutes before kickoff.
Yes.
Oh, maybe the wind's blowing this way, or, you know, so, you know, yes, just some, whatever reason that you have. Don't do that. Don't do that thing.
I know. This is one I'm going to learn from. Like I said, I'm not going to, I think, especially if it's someone, like you said, if it's someone you really want, if it's someone who you just decided, you don't really want them, that's fine. But I did want Kirby. I just got cheap at the end. I'm going to try to learn from that. That's my most frustrating so far this year. That's my most frustrating fab experience.
And you didn't get Kirby anywhere else, right?
Nowhere else. So,
you're clearly rooting against him.
I don't want to root against him, except now every time he pitches well, I'm going to remember that momentary lapse in judgment where I took the $20 off that bid. And even when I took it off, I even thought to myself, hey, this is not even going to matter. It's not even going to matter. You know, I actually thought he would go for way more than he did. I think I went from 282 to 262. I thought he would go for well over 300. There was a lot of fab money left in this particular league, and I thought he would go for 350. So I was like, oh, it doesn't matter anyways. And then you're going to say, well, Fred, if it didn't matter anyways, why didn't you just leave the 282? I don't know. That one's going to sting. Have you had one that was that frustrating so far this year? Just where you lost out on someone you really wanted, you know, barely.
Yeah, no, not really. I haven't gone to I did get in TGFBI. I actually did get Kirby, but that was the other, I mean, even then I thought, okay, I was a little more aggressive there. I went 313 on him. Mm-hmm. Other leagues, it was more keep him honest bids.
Yeah.
So no, not really. I have ones that I'm like, oh, I should have bid more. I should have been but I didn't go to the wall for him either though. You know, it wasn't like, yeah, so I regret not being all in on Tyler. Like, for instance, on Taylor Ward, I wasn't all in on him. I was kind of in on him, but not all in on him. It's not like I knew. I just been, you know, I think in the past, I feel like I've been burned by bidding too much. So I get that notion.
Yeah,
I get trying to do the Zinke method of trying to have that second place bid and hoping it wins. But no, I felt like this has been a weird, I'll be honest though. I haven't felt like I've been completely on my fab game this year.
Okay.
Part of it is I'm not sure if that it's, if it's because I'm not sure if I'm all in on some of these players. I haven't felt like, oh, this is like George Kirby is a good pitching prospect.
Yep.
Is he the second coming of Steven Strasburg? I don't think so. I think he's a good pitcher, you know, and probably stable the rest of the year, probably. Mm-hmm. But I don't feel like it's the, oh, we couldn't wait for this guy to arrive. Like he's this obvious right. can't miss prospect. I don't feel that.
You just said everything that went through my head at 15 minutes before the fab deadline, when I took $1 off. So in that particular league, also everything I try to do, I grabbed a couple middle relievers that I kind of wanted for this week, and that's fine. It's not special, but I also had a whole bunch of cheap streaming hitters that I was hoping to just grab one of. There was, you know, Daza from the Rockies and Iglesias from the Rockies had it at home all week, and Rafael Ortega, I thought, had a really good schedule for the week. I know Vlad Sedler said afterwards that he bid on Ortega in some leagues, and there were some of the Diamondbacks guys because they have 8 games this week, and I put in just like cheap little like $3 bids on all of them, and I didn't get any of them. And that was, I thought to myself, you know, I just want one of these guys to stream this week, someone with a favorable matchup to throw my last hitting spot, and I didn't get any of them. So in that,
we did the same thing in one of our mains. Tim and I did the same thing, and so we only picked up one player. It was a pitcher. Yeah. We need, and it that's the league where I have Willy Adames and Bryce Harper, and both yeah. went against our way in terms of like having an active hitter, you know, just, I'm going to miss out on a run or two.
Yep.
That's probably going to come back to haunt us at some point.
Yeah. So yeah, the Kirby decision also, and this is a bigger discussion, and I think each person has to figure out this one, is I was trying to decide to, am I too often spending $30 on guys I can get for $5, or spending, you know, $15 on guys I can get for $2? And did that sap my budget to the point where then I got a little cheaper on Kirby?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because if I had another $100 in my budget, maybe I would just would have thrown another $50 on him or something like that. I don't know. These are things that I'm how long have we been playing fantasy baseball, Jeff?
Yeah.
And we're still trying to figure out all these things and explore like our own bad habits and try to solve them. So that's what keeps us coming back for more.
You know, the funny thing is we do develop habits throughout our career and we don't even realize it sometimes, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes. And our habits are all based on our experiences. So what happened to me with Kirby will influence my next decision on a big, probably on a big name free agent, when it maybe really shouldn't.
Right.
Right. Because those should be more big picture things with more sample size than that. But we're human, right? Like, look out the next time a pitching prospect comes up after missing out on Kirby. Like, if I still have the funds, I will not be denied.
Well, and that's just the thing. You're going to react. You're going to create a new problem by reacting to the
old
problem.
I know. The next thing you know, I bid 400 on some pitching prospect. He makes 2 starts and he gets sent back down.
Yeah. You're feeling pretty good about getting Taylor Ward in labor, though. I guarantee you that.
That one went well. Stephen Kwan didn't go as well. That being said, he hasn't been terrible. I see that David mentioned here that he wished he didn't spend 150 on Kwan. I get that. That being said, with Kwan, he's still hitting second in their lineup. He's got 19 runs scored. So he's still on pace to get, you know, 90 runs or so this year. He hasn't been great lately. I'll totally admit that, but he's still hitting 281 without a high BABIP. He hasn't been good in May. At least he got a homer and a steal now. I don't know. I'm not totally giving up on him yet.
All right. Very good.
I get maybe regretting spending 150 on him, but I'm not totally giving up on him yet.
I agree. I actually agree. Yeah. He's still hitting second in that lineup. That's not bad. That is not bad at all.
Yeah.
Paul asks, I just got to ask, is Fred sitting on a floor or is that house built for NBA players? yes, it is a gigantic house. No, he is sitting on the floor.
I am. I'm comfortable down here always for our podcast, but having a house built for NBA players, if living with a bunch of NBA players would probably be really, really fun.
Yeah. I think you've put Eli White in our podcast outline like every week and I always ignore him. So I'm going to let you opine on Eli White here before we sign off today.
Yeah. If you stay till the end, you got the good stuff. Yes. I got one share of Eli White in Fab on Sunday. I missed out on one and wasn't even close. So this is one where I was trying to kind of sneak him through cheap in some leagues. In one league, I bid 12 and he went for 92. So kudos to the guy who spent 92. Like I wasn't going to 100. So anyways, and in labor, I think I tried to sneak him through cheap, and I think Scott Pianowski got me on a tiebreaker on him. Maybe my own fault for being cheap, but steals are hard to come by. White already has 8 of them.
Yep.
Which I don't think many people realize. Now, that's because last week he went crazy, and I think he had 4 last week, and he's already got 1 this week. So it kind of all came at once. I'm not sure if White is a good enough hitter to stay in the lineup. Like, he's hitting 256 right now with a 370 BABIP. So yeah, if that BABIP comes down even 50 points, I don't know if he's a good enough hitter to stay in the lineup. But while he is in the lineup, he's been batting leadoff recently.
Yeah.
All those steals, it might be a chance for someone to just cheap, even if he doesn't stick as a full-time player. If you could have him for 3 or 4 weeks, and in those 3 or 4 weeks, he gets you 6 or 7 steals, that would be really good. For what I think I got him for $5 in an NFBC league. So I think he's interesting if for the right team, like that steals needy team.
Yeah, I was kind of dismissive of him, and I kind of wish I wasn't. So yeah, and he did run against Thor. So did Sam Huff yesterday. So
yeah,
you know, everybody can run against Thor.
Everybody can run against Thor. That doesn't really matter much. But him hitting leadoff is good. And that was a righty on righty, and they put him at leadoff. Maybe because they knew his speed would be the perfect, you know, foil for Thor. He also isn't a total zero in power. So in his career, he's 289 at bats. He has 7 homers. So, you know, project that out. He can maybe like a 12 homer. Like, he's kind of on a 12 homer pace if he played every day all season. So he's not a power guy, but he's not a total zero for power.
Agreed. Yeah. And after this podcast, I'm going to update his projection accordingly.
Yeah.
I'm going to give him more playing time and just give him a little bump, because I was definitely, I was too dismissive of him. And, I will rectify that ill.
Yeah, I think maybe the lesson with White too is, if you can get them cheap, is anyone who can produce a really good steals total. I don't mean like 12, but like, this is someone who could produce, you know, 25 steals or more than that. They're probably at least worth, if you can get them for nothing in Fab, they're probably at least worth putting on your bench to see what happens with their playing time.
Agreed. Yeah. Want to hit a couple closing situations before I sign off here?
Yeah, sure. Good idea. Yep.
All right.
Let's start Marlins, because I'm interested in your thoughts on that one. And then maybe we'll dip into a couple that I had.
You did that on purpose, so you wouldn't have to answer the question. Answer the question. The answer is, I don't know. I thought there was still reason to hold on to Anthony Bender, but I think he came into today's game in the 5th inning. So he's pitching right now there in the 6th inning. So he is a drop for me now. I don't know who the hold is. Maybe it's Dylan Floro. Floro did got thumped hard in his first 2 outings, did have a scoreless outing his last time out. Maybe he should be, maybe he should be better then, in the next time around. But I don't really have a good handle on this situation. You know, it could be anybody really.
Yeah, I agree. I think Bender, like, unless you're really stuck for saves, I think Bender could be a drop. Yeah, Floro looks, I mean, I know last time out he threw like a scoreless inning, but man, he still hasn't struck out a batter. He's got 3
is that
innings.
Bad?
Yeah. Yeah. Is that bad? Yeah. He still hasn't, he's faced 16 batters. Hasn't struck any of them out yet. I throw out a name who I was kind of interested in the preseason, not for any real particular reason that I think the Marlins are interested in him, but Cole Sulcer was decent as the Orioles closer last year at times. Like, he had 8 saves last year, 270 ERA. This year he's a 314 ERA. He's nothing special this year or anything, but I don't think you have to be special to be at least considered. Now, I don't think that there's nothing from the Marlins that makes me think they're going to Cole Sulcer, but before he was traded, I thought he had a decent chance to be the Orioles closer, with Bender kind of, you know, taking himself maybe a little bit out of contention for that job, and Floro not looking good. They could go back to Bender. I don't know. If someone wanted to hold Bender for 1 more week, I wouldn't argue with them.
Yeah. It's just that, you know, pitching the 5th inning today, I mean, that I feel like that takes him out. But see, Sulcer did get the next save chance that the Marlins did have after Bender blew 1 2 weeks ago against the Arizona. That they went on a road trip to San Diego May 8th. Sulcer blew a save. It was gave up a walk-off, actually. They haven't had a save chance since. Mm-hmm. So it's really difficult. They might today, though. They're up 1-0. They're in the 6th inning in this one here. They just, in fact, they took out Bender, and I believe there's a lefty on the mound. I can't tell if that's Tanner Scott or somebody else. Okay. I will get back to you on that one there. I'm sure people are waiting with bated breath on that. But It's a lefty on the mound. We'll find out as I keep talking. So another situation is the Twins. A lot of people are, you mentioned this, a lot of people are on Juan Duran. They're not, my answer on the Twins is the same as the Rays. There is not one guy. By the way, it's Okert in the game right now. Thank you, okay. Ryan Roof. He's quicker than my navigating skills there. But I think Minnesota is much like Seattle, much like Tampa Bay, where if you try to keep saying who the guy is, you're going to be disappointed. There isn't just one guy.
If you could roster any of them, is Duran still the guy you'd want to roster?
I mean, I think he's better than Pagan. But I think Pagan's trusted more frequently than Duran right now. It's a long season, though. We're still May. I think I want Duran.
Me too. He could get you a lot more strikeouts. And if they're flexible with him, he could win a lot more games, you know, by pitching multiple innings in close games. But I do, if I was going to handicap the race to lead the team in saves, I think I would put Pagan first. They seem pretty comfortable going to him. So they've already gone to him. He's got three saves so far in May, five this year. Two of those saves were one run games. And one of them was a two run game. So, I mean, they're not even afraid to go to him in those one run games. It's not like they're just, oh, whatever, we got a three run lead today, we can throw it whoever, we'll put Pagan out there. So, and he's a more of a clear one inning reliever than Duran is. So I could see Pagan leading the team in saves, but Duran being more valuable overall from a fantasy perspective. And I know Tyler Duffy got a save last night, but Pagan was unavailable. He had pitched, well, probably unavailable. He pitched two days in a row. So Duffy's not someone who interests me, but it definitely seems like they don't, or at least they aren't right now, they aren't ready for Duran to get a real shot at the closer's job. So I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. I still would like to have him rostered, but I got to back off saying that he could be, you know, like a top 10 or 15 reliever.
Agreed. Hansel Robles now leads the Red Sox with two saves. First guy to get two for Boston so far. That's a combination of just their crappy bullpen and also the fact they've only won like 14 games. They're not going to get a save today, by the way. It'll be a miracle if they get a save. Houston just hit another home run, Kyle Tucker grand slam.
Okay.
So 13-3 in that one. And I know you have some Tucker in your life, so you're pretty happy about that. You have them in friends and family. Is that where you have them?
No, I have them in an NFBC super. So
that's a
valuable
super.
One. Yeah. Where I didn't get George Kirby. Not that we're bringing that up again.
No, we never bring that up.
Anyways, Robles is pitching way over his head. I'm not that confident in him. He has a 10-6 strikeout to walk ratio and 14 in the third innings. That is not closer worthy. His FIP's up close to 5. His XERA is something like 6.5 or something. Like, he could maybe get some more saves just because there's nothing else really going. Like, there's no one else really taking that job, but I don't think he can hold it. It's a mess.
Assuming arguendo that there will be saves worth chasing for Boston, who's the guy you want to chase on this team?
Well, now I'm going to go back and say, Robles? I guess. So to put this in perspective, I would rather own Pagan, Duran. Who else have we already? Oh, I'll take my shots even at the Marlins guys first. I think I would own Bender or Floro. I think I would probably own them over Hansel Robles right now.
You kind of dodged the question there. I don't know.
Okay, well, I'll say Robles.
I'm kidding you.
Once I
time.
Said that, I guess my point is, once I would rather have Dylan Floro on my bench, then I guess I'm going none of the above.
Yeah. Ryan Roof, who does our closer encounters, manages our closer grid, says he's going to dive deep on the Red Sox pen in his next edition. So there you go. Maybe we'll have a better answer there. And honestly, I don't have an answer. It's not Ryan Brazier. I know that. Matt Barnes seems to lose velocity every time out. Every time he gets like one good outing, one bad outing. The bullpen's like blown 9 save opportunities. Now, blown saves are kind of a deceptive stat because you can get a blown save in the 7th inning. It's not really a save opportunity. It's just you blew a lead. They've blown 9 leads. How about that? And I think that's a fairer stat.
There should be a new stat. They should divide that stat up. Like, blown saves should be – there should be blown leads as a stat, and blown saves should be blown leads in the 9th inning or later. But whatever. I don't run Major League Baseball. Matt Stram's pitched really well for them this year. I don't – They don't seem that he has one save. They don't seem that inclined to really make him the closer, but he's pitched better than everyone else we've talked about.
Yeah. Barnes. I was just looking at some of the details on him and yeek. Oh my gosh. He's gone. Yeah. He's lost almost 2 miles an hour on his fastball. His K percentage dropped from 38% last year to 16.4 this year. Swinging strike percentage is 9.4%. Need I go on? No, I don't need to go on. Let's move on from him. Because you should move on from him. I thought Diekman was a nice little signing, but it's not really worked out. He has strikeouts at least, but 9 walks and 11 and a third. And if you watch Diekman, he doesn't want to throw his fastball. He just nibbles and nibbles and nibbles. It's not fun at all. Yeah, I think it's certainly not appearing in this film so far. Maybe some of the lesser names in the back end of that bullpen, like Danish or Davis, or maybe we'll find someone. I'm just like spitballing out names here. I'm not even looking at the possibilities, but it's pretty ugly as far as that goes, as far as that bullpen goes. So we'll see, but I don't like it whatsoever. One last bullpen, the Giants, Camilo Duvall, 6 of the last 9 Giants saves. I mean, Jake McGee's on the IL. Duvall's looked pretty darn good. I'm in on Duvall now if I had a chance to be.
100%. He's the guy, I think. Like you said, like McGee's kind of out of the picture. Duvall's control skills aren't great. That's okay. He's not a top tier closer because of that. Mm-hmm. The Giants win plenty of games. He with his strikeout rate, he can be the closer. Is he going to have the odd time where, you know, he walks 2 batters and it's really frustrating, or he walks the leadoff man, he comes around to score and it's frustrating? Yeah, absolutely. And that's why he's not a top tier closer, but I think he's a mid-tier closer, and mid-tier closer in this landscape means like the 10th or 12th closer, because there only are like 20.
100% agree. 100%. We'll close on that note, unless you got anything else to add. Anything you're working on that you want to let people know about on Yahoo?
Well, I mentioned I'm going to have that article Thursday on the luckiest players so far this season. Tomorrow, some players who have struggled mightily in May and you might be able to buy low on, because I find that people don't know much. We talk about this sometimes on this podcast. We don't know much about players sometimes, where we don't keep up the day-to-day minutia of players who we have no shares of, but the players who we have a lot of shares of, you really notice. So, for example, could you sweep in tomorrow and get Nathan Eovaldi on the cheap? So some names in that.
It won't be expensive.
Maybe I'll add. You know, maybe that. I will add Eovaldi to that article overnight.
There you go. Yeah. Good stuff. All right. That is going to finish it up for us today. Good stuff. Thanks everybody for jumping in. By the way, Ryan Roof says John Schreiber is the deep name in Boston. The Boston Open. You want to keep an eye on. So I will do a dive into Schreiber after this podcast, and I'll learn about him a little bit more. Thanks to everybody just chiming in. Really do appreciate it. I love the interaction. We got James Anderson tomorrow with the Prospect Pod. Thanks for locking in here with RotoWire. Take care.